Welcome to the Watch Your Mouth podcast, a podcast about phrase etymology and why we say the things we say. I'm Milo.
And I'm Dave.
He's my dad.
And she is my daughter.
That's how that works.
It is. And as you all know, we are smack dab in the middle of one of Milo's favorite seasons and actually a lot of people's favorite season. What is that season, Milo?
The spooky season.
Halloween spooky season. And for our
it's the month of Halloween.
It is. Yes. Very good. Now for our longtime listeners, they'll know that last year at this time, I had talked about my next door neighbors. You remember this, Milo?
Yes. I've been wanting to ask you about this for this year. Go on.
Well, here we are. We're going to start this episode wonderful. With exactly that. So last year, you may remember. So just as a kind of a reminder for those who may have listened, and for those who didn't listen, why weren't you listening? Shame on you. But anyway, my next door neighbors directly to the lot next to me, they love Halloween more than any other human beings in the entire universe. And they just decorate to the hilt. They just always, the impressive thing is they always have a different theme. A couple of years ago, it was skeletons, and they've done zombies. Do you remember what I told you they did last year, Milo?
Yeah, because I'm still mad about it. It was the monster prom, and they missed out on doing Monster Bash instead of Monster Mash.
Yes. Well, that was, yeah. I think the Monster Bash was 2 years ago. Last year was the Carn Evil.
That's right. Also good. I appreciate the commitment to the pun on that one.
And they even had a ticket booth, but there was clowns. All clowns.
Don't like that. I think I talked about that last year. Don't like clowns.
And there's pictures online because I took a bunch of pictures. And so there's pictures online of the clowns. They do a nice job. They're really into it. And I don't want them to, I don't ever want to be alone with them in a basement or anything if they have weapons.
Well, especially in their basement during the summer months, because it's probably full of lots of spooky things. We got to keep it somewhere.
I know, right? And then I might become of the next year's Halloween exhibit, and I don't want that.
But so I have to know, what is this year? I have to know.
Do you have a guess? It's a new theme.
Oh, gosh. It is a new theme. Okay. Under the Sea.
Yeah, new stuff. Wow. You couldn't be more off. No, it's not. It's space aliens.
Is it really?
It's all different space aliens.
I was exactly opposite.
Yeah, instead of going down, you should have went up. Mm-hmm. So they have Yoda. They've got Darth Vader. They've got the alien from the movie Alien, which I don't know if those have names. Forgive me.
Yes, they do.
They've got, and there's more. There's more. I'll try to remember to take pictures and put them online. Huh. So that's my annual update on what the neighbors are up to.
Well, it's less spooky this year, at least. Like, yeah, Yoda's not spooky.
No, but then they have the alien with the like thing bursting out of someone's chest. And, yeah, you know,
chest bursters. Don't like those.
Yeah. No.
Sorry, John Hurt.
Huggers, they don't have those. Yeah. Yeah. Those poor guy. Now, as you know, Milo, I don't, this time of year is cool. It's fine. It's not my favorite. I don't like it as much as they do because no one does or you do. I don't really like a lot of super scary stuff. I don't read the horror or the literature. Like the Midnight Mass movie on Netflix you watch.
TV show, yes.
I don't understand why you would do that, but all right.
It's great.
No, it's not. It's terrible. So today, though, we are not going to talk, keeping in line with who I am and how I view this, we are not going to talk about something overly spooky, but I was talking to my wife, Carol, today on the way home before filming or recording today, is once we started doing this podcast and I started trying to question all the things you just take for granted, which is kind of what this podcast is about. Like, why do we say that? Or why is this? A while ago, I got to thinking, you know, we all are familiar with witches and what witches look like. But the thing that really caught my attention is, you know, what is a witch's general mode of transportation, Milo?
Motorbike.
Yes, a motor. That's right. They like the Suzukis. They show them the Yamahas. Don't know why. Mm-hmm. No, not, that's not true. What is it?
A broom.
A broom. And you think, and you get so used to seeing that, you never think, well, why would they do that? That's kind of weird. Why do they show them riding a broom? That doesn't seem to make much sense. But that's today's episode. If you listened last week, I gave a little hint, so you already know. So I don't know if you do it this way, Milo, but this is how I do it. When I start doing research, I just kind of Google it. You know, I'm just going to Google it, and then all the articles will come up. But as you've probably noticed, if you've Googled anything over the last few years, when you Google something, it'll generally come up with a website, and then there'll be other questions other people have asked, right? So I type in, why do witches ride brooms? And there's a one main article, and then here's other questions people have asked. And one of those I thought was awesome. And the question apparently someone Googled was, can you really fly on a broom? That was something someone needed to know. So I was a little amused by that because, yeah, I don't know.
That is so delightful.
Keeping this in,
I like to picture they were standing on the edge of a cliff straddling a broom and they thought to give it a quick Google first.
Hold on a second. hold on a second, Phil, before we jump. Let me just do some quick research here. Oh, as you know what? You can't. You know, and for those listening, if you are standing on the edge of that cliff with the broom straddled, you can't actually fly on it. So don't.
Yeah.
So I was literally, I'm, you know, earlier this week, I'm Googling it all. And I'm like, just very naively and very innocently going about my way. And then the articles start coming up about the imagery of why witches and broomsticks. And I'm like, I am an idiot.
Yeah,
because
a little bit of a blind spot there.
Well, I felt really dumb because this is obviously has some very sexual imagery, yes, as to, you know, and I think I should have. I feel kind of dumb that I didn't catch that, but
I don't think it's dumb. I will say, in your defense, innocent maybe. But yes, for those listening with small ears, this might not be the one for you.
Maybe not, but I'm gonna keep it fairly family friendly. But I mean, we're gonna get into some of the history of this and why it is what it is. So we're gonna start with just kind of, I wanted to start with a dictionary definition of what a witch is considered to be.
Okay, interesting.
I thought, you know what, I think I'll do this, Milo. When I say witch, I want you to think of someone of what a witch might look like. And I don't mean modern day people who are Wiccans and, you know, and would call themselves a witch. And I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the classic. What does a witch look like? Boom. What do you see it in your head?
Mm-hmm. If I'm going off of like the most stereotypical cartoon, you're picturing green skin. That's basically right. You're picturing Elphaba, right? The Wicked Witch of the West. You're picturing green skin, maybe like a wart on the nose. There's a cat around. There's a big pot of cauldron of bubbling liquid. There may be, you know, especially old or haggard looking with the frizzy hair, and they're
come in
pairs of threes.
Big pointy hat. Yep. So the dictionary definition of a witch is this: a woman thought to have magic powers, especially evil ones, popularly depicted as wearing a black cloak and pointed hat and flying on a broomstick. Now, I knew that witches had been around for a very, very long time because, as most people know, as I've mentioned on this podcast, I used to be a pastor and I've spent a lot of time reading, studying the Bible. And witches, of course, are mentioned in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
You know this.
Mm-hmm.
One of the more famous stories is, do you know in the Old Testament where there's a story specifically involving a witch?
Yeah, because they summon up John the Baptist and talk to the ghost of John the Baptist.
Nope. That's okay. That happens, though, right? No, it doesn't.
Oh.
No, I'll go into the story right now.
Okay.
It's in the Old Testament, and it's King Saul. He's the first king of Israel, and he was apparently a very tall man, fairly striking to look at, apparently. Didn't want to be king, and as he becomes king, he kind of really messes up, and things go south for him. He's about ready to fight a battle. He's got a really big battle coming up against the ever-famous Philistines, and he decides to go to the Witch of Endor.
Yes.
And so he wants to get advice, and the person who kind of the person who anointed him to be king was a prophet named Samuel. Samuel has died, and Saul's like, I need good advice. I only trust Samuel. He'd heard some stories of the Witch of Endor, apparently. He goes and seeks her out and has to kind of disguise himself because, you know, if he's supposed to put her to death if he's able to get in contact with her. But he has her call up the spirit of Samuel. And according to how the story goes, she was successful. And Samuel kind of yells at him and is like, you're an idiot. Why did you bother me? I've been playing Rummy Cube, which is an odd part of the story that not many people know. That's not true. But no, she does apparently successfully call him up according to the story. And he is mad at Saul for summoning him. And he does not help him with a battle except saying, I think he says you're going to die. Yeah. So anyway, this is oddly enough not a story that VeggieTales has ever tackled, and you've never seen it told on Flannel Graph. But okay, so as I'm reading these articles and I'm trying to get a number of different perspectives on this, a lot of the articles had the same picture of a witch, and is exactly what you said. It is the Wicked Witch of the West from The Wizard of Oz. And you're very good, and you like to play Wicked, and you know her first name. Do you know her last name?
Elphaba's last name? I don't remember it now.
It's Gulch.
Gulch.
Because gotcha. There's Elphaba and Elmira, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, and funny little story, my cousin is married to a guy named Rex Gulch.
Sure.
So maybe, yeah.
And I didn't know that.
It's true. My cousin Tracy, her husband's name is Rex Gulch, and now she's Tracy Gulch. And you got to agree with me that Rex Gulch makes a dang fine cowboy name. Does it not? Yeah. Rex Gulch?
Yeah. But I was also picturing it as all one word, and then it sounds very like fantasy, like he's like a toad creature or something. I don't know.
Well, he actually is a toad creature. That you nailed that part. Yeah. So, but the sad, even though Rex Gulch is a fantastic cowboy name, sadly, he is not a cowboy.
Oh, but a character from Redwall. It sounds like a character from Redwall.
Oh, yeah. Brian Jakes. That's yeah. For sure. Of course, you know, and you mentioned it already, I think, the Witches Coming in 3. That is, of course, an image mainly by our friend William Shakespeare, who we like to play with his name, Billy Shakes, and his play. What play was it?
Macbeth.
The witches show up. Macbeth.
Yeah. Also parodied very extensively later on by Terry Pratchett.
Oh, I didn't know that. I haven't read Pratchett yet.
And the Pratchett's witches are maybe the best fictional witches that there are, in my opinion.
Well, you know, that's actually an interesting point. Is the most popular witches in history or in like in media? I would argue it is the number one has to be one of the most popular courses from The Wizard of Oz. And that's why like all these different articles have a picture of her in the green skin and the whole thing. And she was terrifying, especially when I was a child. That was a scary thing.
Yeah, the flying monkeys will come get you.
That's right. And now Milo is running around the room, flapping her arms like a flying monkey.
I played a flying monkey in a play in middle school, and I was deeply ashamed. I hated it. I felt awful.
Were you able to commit to it as your wolf howl that you mentioned in the last one?
Yeah, no. So this is actually in the same play. In the first act, I was the big bad wolf. In the second act, I was a flying monkey. And the person I had a crush on was playing the evil witch. And I was a flying monkey and was deeply, deeply ashamed.
To be her minion, or that you had to act like a monkey flying?
That I had to act like a monkey in front of the person I had a crush on.
There you go. And did you do the did you do that or not?
I did not. I think I was supposed to, and I just flat out didn't.
You're like, screw it, I'm not doing that. I have my dignity. I may be 10 years old, but anyway, so witches, of course, there's stories of them out throughout history. As we said in Macbeth, there are the three different witches, and they have probably one of the more famous, there's lots of witches poems, but there's a great poem. You know, do you know the poem,
double,
right?
Double, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble.
That's good. That's pretty good.
Thanks.
And then in real life, of course, probably one of the other very famous instances of witches showing their face were in the town of Salem, yes, in 1692. I wanted to do just a tiny bit of research on that. Do you know how many people died or were executed during, ooh, the Salem witch trials? Because I didn't
want to say it was between 10 and 20.
Oh, very good. 19. Okay. Well, 19 people hanged and 5 others died in custody. And additionally, a man was pressed beneath heavy stones until he died.
Yes, which we talked about 2 weeks ago, I believe.
Yeah. And so for many thousands of years in the Western world, of course, churches had a lot of power, still does. They did not look kindly on witches. It was a great way to have someone killed. You're just like, oh, I think they're a witch. Well, then we got to kill them because there's, yeah, nothing else we can do.
The whole thing of if she floats, she's a witch and we kill her. And if she sinks and drowns, well, then she was innocent, but she's gone anyway.
She shouldn't hang out with those type of people. So between the years 1400 and 1700, an estimated 70 to 100,000 people were put to death on suspicion of being a witch, which is a pretty darn big number.
That's a lot of people.
So obviously it's not easy being a witch, which does bring us up to needing a handy mode of transportation. This is called a Segway. No, they didn't ride a Segway. Segway is leading into the next piece.
I wish. I would watch a movie about witches riding around on Segways.
Do they fly, though? That's what I want to know. Are they flying? Well,
I feel like that's bordering too close to Hocus Pocus, where they fly on vacuum cleaners.
I never saw that movie.
I saw it for the first time last year because...
Did you? We talked about that. And you were as impressed as they hoped that you would be.
It's very cute. I think it's definitely one of those things that you watch it as a kid and you get a lot of affection for it. And so it really stands out in your mind because the nostalgia powers you through. Sure. But watching it as an adult, it was like, that was really cute. It's nice. It's a little scary for a kid's movie, but I can see why people like it for sure.
Like Wizard of Oz. So we want to talk about the mode of transportation, and this is where it gets a little dicey. So clearly, witches ride brooms. We've seen it for a long time. We're used to seeing it, but why a broom? Well, we go back to one of the part of the imagery that you mentioned, which is the boiling cauldron, which is having a pot of something bubbling. And apparently historically, witches or people considered to be witches were involved in some type of pharmacology. And so apparently part of this, their magic potions, the bubbling cauldron, involved of various plants that use some hallucinogens.
Okay.
Or some things, these plants that caused hallucinations, things like, and I'm so sorry if I'm saying this incorrectly, Atropa belladonna, which is deadly nightshade.
Yeah.
Isochiamus, niger, henbane, mandragora, officinara, mandrake, and datura stramonium, which is jimson weed. And during the Middle Ages, parts of these plants were used to make brews or ointments or witches' salves for witchcraft, sorcery, and other nefarious activities. And a lot of times, of course, back in the day, when there was a healer around and they would be known for mixing these different plants together, and a lot of times, I imagine they were elderly people that carried over the wisdom, and they would come and heal somebody, and they probably did do some type of incantation or things that they said, or they'd do it during a full moon because they didn't, I mean, obviously that was the extent of science in their day. Mm-hmm. And then people are like, oh, this person has a special power. They have a special ability and they know how to do this, but it's also attached to other, possibly supernatural things going on. And, it gave them power to be able to heal. And so if that wasn't from someone else in power, they could be like, oh, what they're doing is wrong and bad and they're evil. And then you just throw the witch tag on them. So now you might be thinking, well, Dave, none of this is that risque. It's not that big of a deal. Now, this is where we get to that. So what is a great way to introduce drugs into your system? Because some drugs that you swallow, especially the plants that we mentioned, they'll make you very, very ill. And you probably won't get much of the impact you had hoped for, because you'll be too busy vomiting or having intense stomach cramps. So how could you possibly bypass taking drugs, ingesting them? Could there be another orifice in the body to introduce said drugs?
Maybe the same way that supermodels get drunk.
Oh my God.
That's a thing, right?
No, what?
Oh, yes, it is. Yes.
You may be right, but okay.
At least that's like a story that's circulated on the internet for quite some time. And I feel like
supermodels are putting alcohol in their vaginal area, is what you're saying.
No, I was speaking of the anus, but.
Oh, that too. So they're pulling alcohol in their butt?
Yeah, so that it absorbs the alcohol, but they don't get the calories.
Well, that, okay.
That's,
well,
I don't know if that works. I don't know. That's just a thing I've seen, referenced in multiple places.
So I was looking at an article in Forbes magazine written by David Kroll, who is a plant-based pharmacologist based in Denver, and I am going to quote him. This is just from his article. Somewhere along the line, the observation was made that the hallucinogenic compounds, hyoscine in particular, also known as scopolamine, could be absorbed through sweat glands in the armpit or via the mucous membranes of the rectum or vaginal area. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, there's something just really awesome about, it's just so sexy saying mucus and vagina in the same sentence. Great.
Perfect.
Great stuff. Very comfortable. Hey, kids, hope you're having fun listening to this episode. Ask your mom about that. Okay, here's some more from that same article. The earliest clue comes from a 1324, the year 1324 investigation of the case of Lady Alice Keiteler. I don't know. She was the first recorded person condemned for witchcraft in Ireland, Lady Alice was. And this is a quote from that investigation. You'll like this. In rifling through the closet of the lady, they found a pipe of ointment wherewith she greased a staff upon which she ambled and galloped through thick and thin. There
right?
you go.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it's great. And in the 15th century records of Jordanes de Bergamo, also good. But the vulgar believe and the witches confess that on certain days or nights, they anoint a staff and ride on it to the appointed place or anoint themselves under the arms and in other hairy places.
Oh, gross. I don't like that particular way of phrasing it. It's not pubic hair is gross. That's not my implication, but just.
I think it's more offensive than just saying in your vagina or something like that instead of other hairy places.
It's one of those things where if you dance around it too much, it makes it worse.
Oh, 100%, 100%.
Yeah.
So a lot of these different passages account for why so many of the pictures of the time depict partially clothed or naked witches astride their broomsticks. So that explains partially why broomsticks, but it doesn't. But what about the flying part, which we're going to get to? And so I don't know. I was doing a little bit of thinking about it, and perhaps the drugs were smeared on the broomsticks as a kind of hide them in plain sight delivery system, right? And so they could be around. Guys aren't going to touch the broom because in that day it was very much considered a feminine thing to clean. Mm-hmm. And so it would be maybe a good thing to use. It's just right out there. And maybe it would be kind of a F you to the guys who thought they were in charge. And they're like, the broomstick's right there and I'm doing stuff with that.
Which is also a pretty common thing in like witch imagery too, right? That it's all this kind of feminine things,
100%.
Like what's perceived as feminine being like the cooking materials and the, you know, drying herbs and being a gatherer and doing the housework, that kind of stuff seems pretty tied in with the witch imagery.
Exactly. So why flying? We talked a little bit earlier about hallucinogenic drugs, and apparently the drugs mentioned earlier, made people a little bit drowsy and caused wild dreams, often involving flying and wild dancing.
Okay.
So that gave me a little bit of an explanation, but I wanted more. So I dug in and I found this article on history.com, which I'm going to kind of just paraphrase some of it. So bear with me for a couple minutes here. So the first witch to confess riding a broom was a man, Guillaume Edelin. Edelin was a priest from Saint-Germain-en-Laye near Paris. I probably said that wrong. He was arrested in 1453 and tried for witchcraft after publicly criticizing the church's warnings about witches. So he's like, hey, guys, you are not treating these people well at all. And they're like, oh, you must be one too. And they put him on trial and basically tortured him until he confessed. They did not kill him, and he repented after the torture, but they imprisoned him for life.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Tracks.
The earliest known image of witches on brooms dates to 1451, when two illustrations appeared in the French poet Martin Lefranc's manuscript, Le Champion des Dames, the Defender of Ladies. I know I have a wife who speaks French. I should ask these pronunciations, but I didn't. In the two drawings, one woman soars through the air in a broom and the other flies abroad aboard a plain white stick, and both wear headscarves that identify them as Waldensians, members of a Christian sect founded in the 12th century, who were branded as heretics by the Catholic Church, partly because they allowed women to become priests. So
that was a wild ride of a sentence.
I know, wasn't it? This heretical part of Christianity, the Waldensians, because they allowed women to become priests, the Catholic Church is like, not only are they heretics, they're witches. Burn them.
Yeah, that sounds like something the Catholic Church would be eager to say.
Anthropologist Robin Skelton suggests the association between witches and brooms may have been roots in a pagan fertility ritual in which rural farmers would leap and dance astride poles, pitchforks, or brooms in the light of the full moon to encourage the growth of their crops. This broomstick dance, she writes, became confused with common accounts of witches flying through the night on their way to orgies and other illicit meetings, like playing Dungeons and Dragons, I guess.
Yeah, Dungeons and Dragons is just code for orgies, everybody. Okay. Definitely the coolest kids go into those.
Absolutely. Well, they got nothing else going on. They're not doing the sports. So
I say that as a weekly player of D&D. Yeah. I am not shunning that game.
No. And I play Gloomhaven, which is a lot like it. So beginning in the 17th century, accounts of witches using broomstick to fly up and out of chimneys became more commonplace, even as women became more closely associated with the household and domestic sphere than ever before. According to one custom, women would prop a broom up outside the door and place it up a chimney to let others know they were away from the home. Perhaps because of this, popular legend embraced the idea that witches left their houses through their chimneys, even though very few accused witches ever confessed to doing so. And again, it should be noted that when we say confessions, they were pretty much all achieved through torturing people. Because if you make a person hurt badly enough, they will admit to pretty much anything, even liking country music. But that would take a bit. Okay, one last thing about witches. Why the hats? Why the iconic black, large, pointy hat? And I was quite surprised by what I found.
Okay.
This is from an article from a website called In Style. And it's about, obviously, style and, you know, fashion. So this is what they had to say. And I think this is pretty cool. It's interesting. This iconic hat is very old. Big cone-shaped hats were found on mummified remains in a city in China, Subeshi. These mummies were named the Witches of Subeshi, and they were sisters accused of practicing magic in Turfan between the 4th and 2nd centuries BCE, and were found with pointed hats on their heads. This, and this is just me here, this article said that Subeshi was a lost city, but if it was lost, how did they find the mummies? I don't understand. I'm not sure. Anyway, during the Middle Ages, pointed hats were actually associated with the Jewish religion and, unfortunately, of course, Satan, which we referenced in our last episode. Participation in Kabbalah rituals.
Did those two get tied together because of anti-Semitism, or what's
We're getting there. We're getting there.
Okay. Go on.
Participation in Kabbalah rituals had people believing that Jews held magical powers for making a deal with the devil. And in the 1200s, Jews in Hungary were required to wear a specific hat style to signify their religion. It was called a Juden hat or Jewish hat or horn skull cap, became a target of anti-Semitism. Hmm. And soon after, during the European witch hunts. And the powers that be in Hungary made all those accused of preaching magic wear them as punishment.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, great stuff.
I am now just also realizing the whole thing where there was I think around that time there was, in like anti-Semitism propaganda, they would depict Jewish people with green skin. Do you know if there's an association there as well with like witchery?
No, but I do believe there was an association with, of course, anybody who disagreed with the Christian or the Catholic faith was often there in league with Satan, especially if they had any degree of influence or power in the community. Then they had to try to get them all, cast bad light on all of them. So, which is, you know, obviously really, really terrible. So somehow, despite the fact that the Quakers of the mid-1600s to 1800s didn't wear pointed hats, the style is still strongly associated with Quakers as well. Puritans in America believed the Quakers were magic practitioners who danced with the devil during the nighttime hours, and their hats, which were black and included wide brims, were part of the controversy. Again, we're getting an idea of bad people being associated with witches, which are then associated with what they're wearing. So we know how to identify them because people who are considered bad people want to make sure everyone knows. It makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
This is cool. Another part of the hat where we get it from. In medieval Europe, women who brewed beer at home also had the reputation of being witches, brewing their magic in their cauldrons. They were called alewives, and they were suspected of being herbalists, which was associated with magic at that time. But more importantly, they wore hats similar to the classic witch hat. Any woman who defied the patriarchal norms of the 1700s and 1800s was pretty much considered to be a Satan-worshipping sorceress. And since they worked in a male-dominated profession, they got a lot of trouble. And people look down upon them. So even with all these cone-shaped hats throughout history, we go again back to The Wizard of Oz. When that comes out, the book out in 1900, the movie in 1939, now is just common wear for the stereotypical witches. You're going to see them riding that broomstick, which you now know is sexual. You're welcome, because every time you see that, you're going to think of this episode. And tell your friends, they should listen.
Well, not necessarily sexual, at least
it wasn't overly sexual, but it kind of got a little bit sexualized with the drugs.
Right. Like they were being used as implements to introduce something to areas that can be used sexually. But it seems like there's some implication that there was also sexual things happening there. But based on the stuff you gave, I don't know if it was like expressly sexual, but I've also heard them referred to as broomsticks, like being metaphors for Satan's genitals. So it gets complicated.
Well, and that's where again, when you're somebody that you disagree with, and their religion, and it's not syncing with what you want them to do or what you want them to believe, you know, we demonize them quite literally. And then, and then of course, sexual promiscuity or that's always part of the accusation as well. And so, yeah, there was also referencing of the broomstick being a phallic representation and also a feminine representation at the same time, which is, you know, kind of a grasping of power. Mm-hmm. As they're trying to present that image of power, which they thought they were really wanted was to be powerful, which is why a witch would want to do magic.
Right.
So that's it. What stood out to you, Milo?
I like the witches of the lost city, the mummies wearing hats. That's just a very evocative image.
Isn't that great?
That stuck out to me right away.
Yeah. I just when I was, the thing that stood out to me is I'm reading this and I'm doing my research and I'm like, oh, okay, what's this about? And I'm like, right. Duh. Yeah. Okay.
For the listener, my father did text me and go, oh no.
Oh boy, there's some stuff here. And I tried to kind of, if you want to do more research, as always, it's out there in, There's all kinds of information on this, and the Waldensians, that's an interesting sect of Christianity, that with the hats they wore and how they tried to throw major shade at them and really discount them.
Yeah, I'm curious to learn more about them.
Yeah, there's good stuff out there. We might come across their paths again. Well, thanks everyone for listening to this, another spooky episode of Watch Your Mouth.
Thank you for sticking with us through spooky months. We will not be spooky forever, but we will be for another week or so. So hang in there as we continue to be ghosty and spooky. If you would like, you can leave us a review on your listening platform of choice or on our Facebook group, which you can join to see pictures and stuff related to the episodes and keep updated about our update schedule. Thank you to Tony Gebhardt for our theme song. And if you have any questions, comments, or corrections, you can email us at watchyourmouthpod@gmail.com. And we'd love to hear from you, because we're always looking for suggestions and stuff.
Yeah, and we really, reviewing us helps a lot. It helps get promote the podcast. Please share our episodes on Facebook or Twitter or wherever you want to share them. That would be really helpful for us, as we would love to grow our audience.
Yeah, we appreciate it. But in the meantime, we hope you have a very happy end of your October, and we will see you next week. But in the meantime, I'm Milo.
And I'm Dave.
Stay curious and carry a hatchet.